Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT. Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Tech News Today for Monday, January 31st, 2011. Tech News Today is brought to you by MailRoute.info. MailRoute is a secure hosted service that provides enterprise-grade virus and spam filtering to companies of any size. Try it right now, absolutely free, at MailRoute.info. Welcome to Tech News Today. I'm Tom Merritt.
I'm Sarah Lane.
I'm Darren Kitchen.
And I'm Jason L.
And this is Monday in the world of technology.
Sure is, Tom.
It's Recall Monday.
Is that what we're calling it?
We are today.
Total Recall Monday?
Total Recall Monday.
Partial Recall Monday.
You're, well, yeah, exactly. If you are a Sandy Bridge chipset, you're being recalled.
So I don't have one. Tom?
I don't have one. Darren?
I have three.
Are you sure they are the P67 and H67 Cougar Point chipsets?
I'm pretty sure.
Yeah.
I've got six SATA ports. I'm only using one of them, so I'm not totally affected.
Here's the scoop. If you have a Sandy Bridge processor, your processor is fine. It's the chipset that has a flaw. The flaw is in SATA ports 2 through 5. There's a flaw in the silicon, too, so this is not something that can be fixed with firmware. Essentially, ports 0 and 1 work fine. Ports 2 through 5, over time, slow down. So your data is not in any danger, but you...
The performance issue.
Yeah, your performance might start to see a hit. So Intel is going to replace them. We don't have a plan from them yet exactly how they're going to do that.
Ship back your...
Well, yeah, you got to go through the manufacturers, because if you bought... I mean, where'd you buy yours from?
Just like Micro Center or Fry's or something.
Yeah, so then Intel's going to be like, well, you need to take it back to Fry's, and then they'll... So
yeah, I don't think they'll take it back. I used the motherboard box as a case. I took like a...
No, like because it's a recall, you'll be able to just say, hey, I've got this board,
just the board.
And then they'll probably...
They're not going to look too hard at what you may have done to it.
All right.
It sounds like a hassle, but how many people is this actually affecting?
Well, dude, if I was using this rather than for building like an inexpensive virtualization cluster, had it been building like a SAN or something like that, or a network attached storage device, yeah, I'd be really miffed, you know?
Well, no, I just want to know how many people in total that are going to have to go through this miffed process. I don't have those numbers.
Yeah.
I'm curious to know.
Potentially affected systems have been shipping only since January 9th. They're only in the consumer channel. They hadn't started shipping to enterprise yet. That would be the huge headache, is if they had already started shipping to enterprise. It looks like it's going to cost them upwards of $700 million to replace the affected materials and systems.
Well, that's a big headache for them, too, then.
Yeah.
It's a lot of money.
$700 million is a lot of money. It's probably not as much money as it is to us.
Intel's a little richer than we are.
Intel expects first quarter revenue to be $11.7 billion, for instance. So $700 million, that's a significant percentage.
Someone's angry.
But,
someone's angry in a meeting somewhere.
Oh, definitely. Right? Somebody's throwing something at something right now. Facebook is throwing something at you, the ability to do comments in your website. Now, this is different than just integrating Facebook's wall feature into a site. You see that a lot.
And you only see that when you're logged into Facebook.
Like right,
if you go to a site and they have that integrated and you're not logged in on another tab or something, you won't see
it. This is Facebook going up against Discuss, for example. And
right.
If you're not familiar with Discuss, it's like a third-party comment system that pretty much any blogging platform can install. I had a problem with Squarespace trying to get them to play nicely with each other, but a lot of people use it, where it's like a universal comment system. So if you're logged in on Discuss and you're commenting all over the place, people can click on your name and see where you've commented otherwise. So it's more of an integrated...
Right, and Discuss offers a nice platform where they've got like the threaded comments and they support the gravatars and, and stuff like that. But again, you're giving up
gravatars being graphic avatars.
Graphic avatars, and you're giving up your comments, though, your ownership of that to a third party. And this,
but it'll also pull in if somebody has referenced your blog post in a tweet, for example. I mean, it's a better way to get the conversation going, because comment systems can seem very closed off and archaic in this world of social networking.
Yeah, some of the WordPress ones are kind of kludgy. There are some plugins to make them a bit better.
Mm-hmm.
But I understand why you might be considering going to a third party like Facebook or Disqus for your commenting.
It's kind of interesting to me that I always use FriendFeed as an example of, you know, Facebook bought FriendFeed so that they could hire FriendFeed's employees and work on stuff. They didn't buy anybody here. They're just competing. And Facebook sometimes can wipe out folks by doing just this.
I can't tell from Caroline McCarthy's report here. She's breaking the story over on CNET whether this is something that is going to be available for everyone or just for partners. She says the company is actively seeking major media companies and blogs to partner with for its launch. So I don't know if that's just to give it a lot of oomph and anyone can use it. But yeah, it looks like not only will you be able to log in with your Facebook ID and then you'd have a nice instant connection between your blog and your Facebook profile or your blog comments and your Facebook profile, but they also say that they might allow logins with Twitter, Google, or Yahoo IDs as well, which would be an interesting open platform and might suck more people into Facebook. If that's true, this next thing that I'm going to bring up isn't as big of a deal, which is Facebook requires you to use a real name. If you want to comment on a blog, sometimes people don't want to comment under their real name. They want to comment under a pseudonym.
Sure. Or even just one of their internet names. I mean, a lot of people are known on in comment areas as they've got a funny name, but that's not actually their
name. Is
that
you, Pam Nelson?
No, but I'm Adam 017381. I'm not really.
That's an interesting family name there.
Peter Kafka over at All Things D points out that People Magazine's website, People.com, has been relying exclusively on Facebook for commenting for a few months now, as has a few other sites. So this may be something that Facebook has been piloting and they're now going to roll out to the wider world.
Yeah, I'll stick with the open source and kind of owning my own comments.
If I had to guess, I'd say Facebook, you know, they partners with Wall Street Journal, New York Times, HuffPo. You know, a big five, see how it goes. And if it turns into something that becomes not only adopted, but very respected as the norm, then people with a little WordPress blogs can get in on the action.
Android is tops now, according to Canalys, which tracked worldwide smartphone shipments throughout 2010, just published numbers for the fourth quarter. Google rose 615.1%. So that's pretty good.
Nice.
to 33.3 million of units shipped. Nokia is now number two in worldwide smartphone shipments. Not full. They're still number one in full phone shipments if you count feature phones and everything else. But if you're just counting smartphones, according to Canalys, Android passed them up. 33.3 million to 31 million. Apple is number three at 16.2 million. RIM slips to number four. Microsoft was the only one who went down. Overall, smartphone shipments went up across the board, and everybody rose, just some faster than others, like Android.
That was actually most interesting to me when I first looked at it. Is like, well, everybody, I mean, yes, Android skyrocketed, not really very surprising, but everybody's up except Microsoft. But then again, Windows Phone 7 came out at the end of last year, so it's like
they didn't get the benefits of the holiday season
and everything. So I'd be interested to see if they decline again in 2011. I can kind of call it dead, but
it was interesting to see the NPD numbers for the United States for the last quarter. Windows Phone 7 gained 2% of the U.S. smartphone market. It didn't do very well. It was off to a slow start, but it was outperformed by Windows Mobile. So people were still buying Windows phones. They just weren't buying Windows Phone 7. A lot of that has to do with the fact that it wasn't released until November, though. So it didn't really get a head start going into that quarter. It was absent for an entire month in the United States, most of a month in the UK.
Well, at least we don't have to keep talking about when will Android take the number one spot from Symbian.
Yes.
It has happened.
It has happened.
Mark this day, everyone.
That old saw goes away. A couple of other numbers. It was like Reportapalooza today. Samsung's Galaxy Tab stole a huge percentage of the market away from the iPad. Android devices captured 22% of global tablet shipments in the last quarter of last year. This is dominated by the Galaxy Tab, the most popular Android tablet at the end of last year. iPad accounted for only 75% of shipments in the period, down from 95%. Is this the end of the iPad?
Wait a
Tout
second.
Tout all these headlines.
There only used to be an iPad.
Right.
Yeah.
So it's like, hey, look, the iPad used to dominate the market because that was the tablet available. And now there are other tablets that are eating into the available market. It's like, look, there's food. People are eating. The variety of food available. Except that one piece of bread that we gave you at first. Not that I'm comparing the iPad to bread, but you get what my drift.
Engadget points out Samsung's Lee Young-hee explained on an earnings call on Friday that sellout sales to customers were actually quite small. So even this 22% is just shipments to retailers.
Just shipments.
They didn't. Samsung isn't even saying they sold a lot of tabs to actual consumers.
Yeah, I mean, 2 million seemed, it was like, wow, that's pretty impressive. Well, that's not what it was.
Well, I mean, also, Android has a huge potential to pick up some market share here just because the least expensive iPad available today is like $500. So, you know, for any, if you just come out with a tablet under $500, all of a sudden it becomes a more compelling option.
Also, an analyst from ASIMCO reporting that Apple, with just 4.2% of the global mobile phone market, according to their numbers, accounts for 51% of the total profits. Ooh. So, again, Apple has never dominated the world in computers, but they've made plenty of money off of them.
Mm-hmm.
And so, in mobile phones, they can afford to start taking that tactic now as well. If you're going to make 50% of the money, you're doing okay.
Yeah.
All right, just a quick note to thank our sponsor, MailRoute, at MailRoute.info. You can get 10% off the life of your account. Want to get yourself free from spam? Try it out for free, MailRoute.info. It's $30 per user per year if you're a single user, or $2 per user per month if you're a business user. And I can tell you, no false positives and no spam is a nice way to get email. Check it out, MailRoute.info. 200 gigabytes used to be the cap in Canada. As of today, metered internet usage, also called usage-based billing, or UBB, is coming to Canada, and it's going to cost you, because it's now 25 gigabytes of a max.
Thanks.
So, bye, Canada users. It was nice that you were watching our stream when you could afford to.
Yeah, no kidding. So 200 gigabytes down to 25 gigabyte per month cap for the same price? Wow.
Yes, for the same price.
Interesting.
What a difference.
How do you justify it?
Well, the way the Canadian Radio Telecommunications Commission justified it, they're sort of the FCC of Canada, was that Bell Canada just can't afford to roll out capacity anymore unless they can charge more. Bell Canada owns the pipes, so now every DSL provider that uses Bell Canada's pipes has to go along with usage-based billing. If you go to Bell Canada, you're going to get the same thing, $25 a month for 25 gigabytes or whatever it is. It may not be $25 a month. But then you can buy more. It's not like 25 gigabytes and then you're done. It's 25 gigabytes down from 200. And then you can buy insurance because, you know, things happen.
But wait a second.
Might have a lot of bits piling up over there. You might want some insurance.
Right. So, like, I buy earthquake insurance because you never know, right?
Right. Right.
But this kind of insurance is actually just a reoccurring subscription fee that provides you with additional monthly usage. So it's $475 more for 40
right.
gigabytes
it's
of additional data.
It's just buying extra internet.
It's
I don't
like,
know
why wouldn't you just... Just add, you know, add $475 to the monthly plan and stop confusing everybody. It's so stupid.
But there's all those people that all they do is check their email, maybe, and they don't want to spend
true.
The extra $5.
They don't have to.
Gigs.
I just don't understand why it's called insurance.
Why is it called insurance? Yeah, it because just be there's another tier,
right? And then there's overage in case you go over.
The fishermen bring in the catch.
What the
fishermen bring in the catch to help them preserve it.
Is this some Canada thing? Is Bill Canada hacking us right now?
I did absolutely nothing.
Close some tabs.
Works with customers.
Something must be playing somewhere.
That was so weird.
That was so weird. I thought,
you know, sometimes
the TV.
It could be like an auto commercial.
Exactly what happened.
Well, good time.
Well, let's put this into perspective, all right? So you're saying you can buy the insurance for an extra, you know, amount of money to get the $5 to get yourself an extra 40 gigs. And then there's the overage up to 300 gigs for, what is it, $1.90?
No, but here's where this makes even less sense. So that's the usage vault plan, right, that you described. So you can go up to 300 gigabytes per month. Hey, you know, if you're a crazy user, or maybe you're a podcaster and you're like, hey, I need the bandwidth. I upload a lot of stuff every month. But it's $190 per gig, which is the same cost as just going over whatever your plan data cap is. It's $190 per gig anyway. So why not just go over?
Yeah, and it's
are you talking about the vault?
Yes.
Yeah. So the insurance is I'm going to pay $5 extra a month to get a 40 gigabyte cap.
Which is still way below the $250 that it was last month.
The vault is I'm going to pay $1.95 for an extra 5 gigabytes that'll just sit there until I go over 1 month, and then I'll eat into it.
So just go over.
Just go. Why wouldn't you?
I think the thing with the vault is, the advantage of the vault, I just realized this,
okay,
is that if I go over by 1 gigabyte, it only takes 1 gigabyte out of my vault.
Yes.
So I still have 4 gigabytes left that I can go over next month. Mm-hmm. If I go over by 1 gigabyte in a month, I have to pay the full $1.95 for that month.
Gotcha.
And then I don't get any credit for the next month. So buying the vault can spread the cost out over a few months.
I guess that's true, but I don't feel like it's like rollover minutes, you know, where you really accumulate a lot. I mean, a gigabyte here and there is really easy to eat up.
Right. I mean, this would sound a little different if we were talking about a 3G connection, but we're talking about a 5 megabit connection here. I mean, your 25 gigabytes a month that you're going to get for your $40, you're going to be able to blow through that in 11.3 hours. And if you go ahead and spend the extra $606.70 before taxes to get the maximum of 365 gigabytes that they're allowing you to have, then, you know, on a 5 megabit connection, that's going to take you 6.9 days. You can't even, that's not even internet for a week.
There is a little bit of an upside to this. If you are already on a plan, you can be grandfathered, which means you can never change your plan. But as long as you don't change your plan, you can continue to have unlimited internet. And I think it's something. There's some qualifications to it, but you can get grandfathered in. The other part of it is you can switch to fiber and get unlimited, or you can switch to cable internet and get a different cap. So you're not stuck on DSL. You do have choices. Those choices are not open to other ISPs to run on them. Yeah. You can switch to the other closed
platform.
You can
switch to like Rogers Cable.
Yeah.
And then
so this is in Bell's interest to push you to the fiber where they don't have to share it with anybody else and they make all the money.
You know, the CEO of TechSavvy, which is a little smaller ISP based in Ontario, the CEO made an interesting point, something at least he's considering. He says, Bell will make much more money, more profit on its internet service, and it's going to discourage Canadians from watching TV and movies on the internet instead of CTV, which Bell now owns.
Yeah.
So, I mean, this is...
Might be a conflict of interest there?
Well, it's a huge conflict of interest because...
Yeah. It's a lot more than Bell saying, listen, it's just too expensive for us to run things this way. They're trying to force habits of their consumers.
Reed Hastings made the point very well last week. It doesn't cost extra to deliver more bytes to somebody. Once you've delivered them speed, you've delivered them speed. And what the ISPs are trying to say is, well, there's congestion coming. The fact of the matter is there has never been congestion. There has never been huge congestion problems yet. They just keep saying, well, we have to avoid them. and it's a big shell game because they are worried about competition and they're worried about increasing their profit margins in any way possible. And good on them for doing it. It just sucks that the government is going along allowing it to happen.
Right. And in most cases, the consumer, your option is to vote with your dollar and not, you know, go with the ISP that has those kind of draconian caps. Although in this case, it sounds like that's exactly what Bell wants you to do, is leave the DSL service and get their fiber.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because then they keep all of the money.
Yeah. It's like intralata phone calls.
Also, four of Europe's biggest ISPs just commissioned a study from A.T. Kearney entitled A Viable Future Model for the Internet, and decided that there are only four ways that they can deal in Europe with this horrible problem of people using the internet. One is charge people more for internet access, an extra €6 per month, they say. Okay, fine. You know, don't love having my rates raised, but
that's an option.
Charge every internet company €0.05 per gigabyte to deliver traffic to your euros, to your euro subscribers. So that would be charge Google, charge YouTube, charge Netflix.
I mean, imagine
Netflix.
How much YouTube would have to pay for something like that.
Allow paid prioritization so sites like Netflix could go faster than everyone else if they cough up the cash, and deploy more managed services that operate over the same last mile IP pipe, like delivering your own telephone and video services directly to your customers. Even in Norway, an ISP called Telenor, which once signed a net neutrality pledge in 2009, now says that they would like to charge customers who deliver content to their folks. They can't afford to roll out more services. They need to charge those free riders that are trying to deliver content. So this is essentially what's going on here. Is in Norway, in Europe, A little bit of the same thing is going on in Canada. We can't afford to deliver all the traffic that our customers want. And so in Canada, they've decided to go to a metered billing for whatever reason. In Europe, they're talking about trying to charge the other guys. And this is the old free ride argument that AT&T tried years ago, saying, well, Google, you know, they get to build a business on the backs of our customers. But it's crap because Google pays to get on the internet already. And your customers want the stuff from Google. That's the only reason Google's not pushing it into your network. It's your customers on your network requesting it. What you're saying is, we would like to charge everyone who our customers want to see.
Right. And everybody that's on the internet has already paid to be there.
Right.
Yeah.
And Google can't. I mean, YouTube is obviously thrilled when the service is being used, but they have no control over how many people want to watch some Britney Spears video on a given day.
And you know, the biggest impact isn't even to Google or YouTube, if you will, that you know, delivers a lot of traffic. It's your, you know, Vidlers and your Vimeos and all of your, you know, third parties, or the next big thing that comes out that then, if this becomes the norm, can't afford, you know, the payola to get into the game.
The reason I want an internet connection is to watch YouTube, to watch Netflix, to send emails, to use data. And as I figure out how to make better use of the internet, I'm going to use more data. That's been true since 1995 when these idiots were saying there's going to be a petaflood and it's going to bring the internet down. It never has. There is enough capacity out there. There is enough technology to deliver this stuff. And the only way these solutions are going to be arrived at is if we have more competition. And at this point, I think it's going to be a really nasty battle for a while because the ISPs are dug in and they have control of the pipes. So it's only going to be resolved, and I believe it will be resolved, when we have different pipes, when we have new interesting ways to deliver the internet to people, things like mesh networking, things by reusing copper fiber in municipal networks. What the ISPs are doing is nailing and they're coffin together for themselves in an old business model, and it will benefit them in the short term because they'll get to rake in all this cash right now, but it's going to force us to figure out how to live without them.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's essentially very dangerous for them.
I mean, in the case of Telenor, that's the Norwegian ISP. They also control the music streaming service WIMP. Well, what does that say about Spotify and competition?
Yeah.
I mean, someone saying, well, we're going to have to dial back on Spotify because they're not playing and paying us as much as we'd like them to pay. Well, that doesn't sit well.
No, it's all of these companies, and this goes for every company, wants the government to stay out of their business when it doesn't benefit them, and want the government to intervene when it does benefit them. Don't listen to their ideology of they're all for free market all the time. They're all for free market until the CRTC can wade in and force them, allow them to give billing. They're all for independence from regulation until someone else starts laying pipes in the ground, and then they say, wait a minute, you have to get right away. You know, we need the government to manage this. So it's just a shell game, and it's going to be a while before we get this figured out. That's the sad truth of it, is this is just going to get worse before it gets better.
Awesome.
Speaking of something that's getting worse before it gets better, still no internet in Egypt. And this just reported, thanks to Dina and a few other folks in the chat room who passed this along, Noor ISP, the last remaining online ISP in Egypt, has now been shut down.
You're kidding. And the reason that Noor was still up, at least in part, was because it was connected to the Egyptian Stock Exchange. Isn't that right?
That was the thinking. Now there's
some, at least some, you know, some parliament operations, I think.
Yeah, now there's some rumors that it was run by an opposition member, and so they were resisting. But
oh, my goodness. Well, that's not good, because I know a lot of folks had opened up their wireless access points, at least the folks that were on that network, which was not a big segment of the population. It was only about 8% of Egyptians' total networking. But if that's down too, then that is really crippling people's communication efforts.
Well, fact is, it's not all that much. The signal finds a way, right? Fax machines, ham radio, even dial-up modems. This is my favorite. Folks have figured out old dial-up numbers that the government had missed, or dial-up numbers in Europe that can be called toll-free, and they're able to get internet access over dial-up that way.
Yeah, apparently ISPs in France, here in the U.S. Sweden, Spain have been reported, have set up pools of modems that will accept international calls to get information.
This was a big discussion at ShmooCon, and we were talking about how actually Jacob Applebaum was putting together a bunch of dial-in numbers from neighboring countries that they could use to dial in, you know, long distance, but get online. I mean, you know, 56K, but hey, you know, it'll get you there. Or even bulletin board systems and use that old FidoNet so that you can still send email.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and as you were, I think it's really interesting as you were talking about net neutrality and how it comes to the point where the ISPs, the ones in control, you know, kind of alluding to that in the Egyptian government here, then the citizens, when, you know, they want what they want, they'll find a way and create their own, whether it's a mesh network that doesn't necessarily need to have internet access as long as they can address each other, you know, build your own.
One example of how you can use the internet in a positive way is the list of missing people in Egypt Google Doc that has been put up. This is a shared document. You have to email to get edit access if you want to use it because people were starting to vandalize it.
Mm-hmm.
But it's essentially, you know, if you know somebody who's missing, you can put their details in there and then other folks can look at that and say, hey, wait, I know where this person is. Last time I looked at it, there were four or five people that had already been found thanks to it. This in a country that doesn't have internet access. Still finding a way to get access one way or another, and then using Google Docs to get around it. It's pretty amazing.
We Rebuild, which is a company that campaigns for unmonitored internet access, they're based in Europe, said they were listening in on ham radio frequencies and were relaying messages by voice or Morse code.
Right, and then there's packet radio, and how are you going to stop that? And that's why, you know, I'm really stoked about, you know, ham operators getting involved, because that's what this is for.
Someone in the chat room was saying Twitter now has it where you can leave voicemails. There's a service. I don't know if it's from Twitter or for someone else, but you can leave a voicemail to post to Twitter.
I believe it's a Google.
Is it a Google service?
Yeah, it's a Google service. I actually have the doc.
So
right
you can
there.
You can you can actually call this number, leave a voicemail, and they'll post to your Twitter account.
Well, I certainly hope it's better than what Google Voice thinks people are saying when they leave me messages.
And this, you know what? This, you're right, Darren.
It's Google Twitter and say now.
This does circle back to the internet argument in a way, which is, you can cut off the internet now, but we have created a culture where people have figured out how to communicate with technology.
Well, right.
So if you cut off the ISP, which is essentially what Canada's almost doing, they're not cutting it off entirely, but they're cutting it down.
Here's a trickle.
There's a way to get around.
But I mean, I would prefer, I don't know about you guys, I would prefer not to have to communicate to you via fax. So yeah, I'll do it if I have to.
Sure, right now. But it's
not like it's the same thing.
And right now, fax may be the most convenient way, but that's not to say that, you know, we're talking about, you're right, the generation, the people that have grown up expecting this kind of access. And these are the same kind of people that are saying, oh, you're going to, you know, force on some draconian DRM? Well, we're going to go to the Pirate Bay. We're going to come up with really interesting ways of doing mesh file sharing like BitTorrent. And, you know, where there's a will, there's a way.
Yeah. I mean, revolutions have been pulled off without the internet for centuries, right? There's no need for it, but this technology makes it easier. It's a new aspect of it, and just cutting off internet access doesn't stop people.
Yeah, the internet's just one place to do TCP. You know, you can do it without the ISP's involvement.
Yeah. Also, on a sad note, Google executive Wael Ghonam is missing in Egypt amid the protests. They haven't heard from him since Friday. He's Google's head of marketing for Middle East and North Africa. Had traveled to Cairo for a conference, but was caught up in the protests. So we'll keep an eye on that, and we wish him and anyone else who is missing in Egypt or affected by the protests well.
Absolutely.
All right, let's finish up with a little report from ShmooCon. You mentioned it briefly earlier in the show. ShmooCon is sort of an East Coast hacker conference here in the United States.
Yeah, there's a ton of hacker cons. There's, you know, your little ones with a couple hundred people, and then you've got your big mecha ones like DEF CON, where there's like thousands of people. And then you've got, you know, the ones where the suits go to, like RSA. And ShmooCon is, I think, capped around 1,600. This year it's sold out in about 20 seconds, so everybody's sitting there hitting F5 or even just writing
That's
bots to buy a
faster
ticket.
Faster than Coachella sold out.
Yeah, it's insane.
Imagine that.
It's a great HackerCon on the East Coast with a good group of people, and I had a wonderful opportunity to go there for the, I think the fifth time now to go and see the latest research from the brightest minds in our community. And one of the most interesting things that I've seen, and I would have linked a article in the show notes if one had been written yet, but I haven't seen any news on it thus far. But Michael Osman had an amazing presentation about a Bluetooth hardware adapter that he has developed called the Ubertooth One, and it is essentially a Bluetooth adapter that's going to allow you to go into what's called promiscuous mode. And that's something that Wi-Fi adapters have been able to do forever, which basically let hackers see anything that is broadcast through the air and allow us to do things like, you know, run Fire Sheep or do man-in-the-middle attacks and sniff up good, you know, goodness from the air, right? Well, Bluetooth adapters thus far haven't been that hackable, haven't enabled us to go into that mode and just see what's, you know, being broadcasted. So he got so fed up just not being able to find a tool. And it turns out the Bluetooth stack and all of the Bluetooth underlying technologies are so broken because, well, there's no reason to fix it because hackers don't have the tools to start.
Security through obscurity. Security. Classic
case. Exactly. Yeah. Yeah, so he gave a great presentation. I have a wonderful time talking to him about how he's actually gone from, you know, security researcher and hacker to hardware developer, learning how to go ahead and build his own chip. And he's come up with a device, which he's calling the Ubertooth One, which allows you to do just that, and that is to sniff Bluetooth. And it's really interesting. He did it on my phone. My phone had Bluetooth on, but I wasn't set to broadcast. I wasn't set to like search for other devices or anything like that. I wasn't in pairing mode. And he could find the ID of my phone. And it's really interesting to think about that because you could potentially put like together just clusters of these adapters. And as people walk by with our mobile phones with Bluetooth enabled in our pockets that are passively putting out that signal, you could, you know, track people's movements. And then he says that it even will have the ability to do injection. So it's really cool that there are tools like Wireshark and Kismet already set up to do stuff like that. And yeah, it's really exciting. Yeah, it's actually got a Kickstarter project up. He's trying to put together, you know, enough people to pledge to get the initial run of the devices so that it can go into manufacturing. And I think it's a really cool project.
I think they should call it promiscuous injection.
Promiscuous injection just for penetration testers.
Sure.
So they can root your box.
That's also good.
And the white hat side of this is the idea of securing the Bluetooth.
Yes.
Stack by
well,
punching
absolutely.
Holes in it.
Yeah, you're not going to find out what's broken until you know or what to fix until you figure out how to break it.
Exactly.
Yeah, and I think there's going to be anyway, yeah. I'm going to go on and on and on about that on Hack 5.
So all right, yeah. Check out Hack 5 if you want to hear more
from
ShmooCon. Android zombies and all kinds
of
stuff.
Yeah, Android rootkits that control over SMS. It's great.
All right, on to the news fuse. The Federal Communications Commission is asking a D.C. appeals court to throw out the Verizon and Metro PCS lawsuits against the agency's new open internet rules. The FCC says that both companies jumped the gun by suing the FCC before its December net neutrality order was even published in the Federal Register. That's the action that makes any federal agency decision live and official. So they may avoid this round of lawsuits on a technicality.
Over the weekend, an Engadget reader reported a new feature on Amazon that allowed them to stream unlimited movies from Amazon's video on demand service. Cool. Apparently, Amazon was giving the perk to Amazon Prime members only. Amazon Prime service gives free 2-day shipping to customers who pay $79 a year. But then the features went away, but not before a screen capture was taken to prove that this guy wasn't dreaming. Of course, no word from Amazon yet. They probably were like, we've been spotted. Took it down, but pretty cool.
Yeah, sign me up.
I'm signed up.
All right.
Just bring it to me.
Yeah. Google and the state of Connecticut have reached an agreement that won't force a courtroom to shut down Google's Wi-Fi spying over the Wi-Fi spying scandal that you guys may remember months back. The settlement means that Google and the attorney led by Connecticut will likely hammer out another agreement regarding the data, which Google has resisted turning over to the government authorities in the U.S.
New attorney general means Google gets free pass. According to the Wall Street Journal, Google plans to hire dozens of software developers to create applications for smartphones and other mobile devices, a new strategy aimed partly at boosting the Android marketplace. However, the article indicated Google might even make cross-platform apps that work not just on Android, but other platforms like iOS.
We've got more white iPhone speculation, but this time it's coming from a really good source. What? Apple co-founder Steve Wozniak was a guest on the Engadget podcast this weekend, where he claimed that the early white iPhone 4 parts caused issues with its camera, which led to multiple delays. Wozniak said that he ordered white iPhone parts from a teenager online who somehow received them from Foxconn, you know, whatever. When he tried to take a picture with the device's flash, however, he said the photo looked like it was taken through cellophane. So there you have it.
It was blinding white.
I need my camera to work, whether it's white or black, so fix it.
Or if you're envious that you don't have the white iPhone, you can modify your black iPhone with some cellophane so it takes similar pictures.
Exactly.
Look for a Flickr group near you.
It'll be the new Instagram filter.
Yes, exactly.
The white iPhone effect.
Now, Facebook is launching a service that'll allow users to earn discounts from businesses when they check in using Facebook's Places feature. People who are visiting participating shops can log in from their mobile phones to receive rewards. Now, companies can use Facebook deals as a virtual lottery card or kind of a coupon system.
Microsoft issued an advisory on Windows security vulnerabilities after exploit code for the bug went public. The bug impacts all supported versions of Windows. It exploits the MHTML protocol handler to cause data leakage. Though the proof of concept code for the vulnerability has already gone public, the company said it isn't aware of it existing in the wild yet. Temporary fixes to turn off MHTML or just use another browser like Firefox or Chrome.
We talked earlier in the show about Google Docs being used for good. Well, Google just updated Google Docs to make it more friendly to people who want to use it as a general online hard drive. People have been waiting for the G Drive for, years now. And Google Docs seems to be quietly changing into that, because any file can now be uploaded to Google Docs. And the new tweaks make it easy to locate files and store them in collection, which is Google's term for folders. So, yay, I think.
Yeah, I'm digging this. Although it disrupted my Google Doc using this morning for a brief period. I thought there was something wrong with my internet. I think it was them messing with it, pushing the thing live. But then once it reloaded, I actually had a much easier way to look at files.
That's
and everything.
Really interesting to think about the cloud products in that way, where you're on the service and then, hey, something's wonky, refresh, and the service is completely different.
Yeah, right.
My software updated.
So. Everybody see Zuckerberg on Saturday Night Live?
Yeah, I saw it.
All right. How about water-propelled jetpack?
What?
Oh, how much? Sign me up. I'm
oh,
in.
Oh, yeah. You got tens of thousands of dollars?
I got a fiver. What'll that make it me?
That won't get you much. You need $99,500. So you just need $99,495 more.
That's easy.
Well, come on,
just
Sarah,
hack it or something.
Raymond Lee is bringing his water-propelled jetpack to the money-spending world. March 2011 launch date and a price of $99,500. His JetLev personal transporter relies on an engine and fuel tank to pump H2O into a backpack that shoots out streams of water to keep you airborne. Top speed is 22 miles per hour. I assume you get a parachute with
this. This was a great Mario game.
A new meeting to crop dusting has emerged, and it's a water-powered jetpack.
Dude, that looks like so much fun.
Yeah, it does.
It looks messy, but
it does
fun.
Look a little messy, but we have jetpacks.
Just keep it They're in the lake.
You can just drive them on water, unlike the ones in
Back
really to the Future.
Awesome. That makes me happy.
Don't eat the yellow snow.
On to the calendar. India's calling RIM's bluff on email access, except RIM isn't really bluffing. You might have recalled last Friday we talked about how India had given RIM until January 31st, which is today, to make some changes to the information that the government can get through the BlackBerry service. And RIM saying, you are asking us something that cannot be done. How many times do we have to tell you? Apparently they're trying to get a hold of the government. The government's just not paying attention anymore, or certainly not responding. So we'll see what happens tomorrow, and hopefully the 1 billion or so people who have BlackBerries in India aren't too terribly affected. Also, January 31st, which is today, or it was yesterday if you're watching or listening to this tomorrow, Bill Gates is going to be on The Daily Show, or was, again, depending on when you're watching this. But that's exciting because The Daily Show is... for a good interview.
If we see if he knows when to walk off this time.
No, yeah. So I wasn't aware that Bill Gates had already been on The Daily Show, but I guess he has.
Yeah.
And you were telling me that in his first appearance, they had the interview. The interview was fine. But as Jon Stewart is sort of saying, okay, I'm coming up next, you see Bill Gates just standing up and walking
off. He didn't realize
off.
That the cameras were still
he
on.
He wasn't disgusted or
No,
anything.
I don't think so.
He's just confused. Yeah. He's not a TV guy. He does other things.
Maybe he'll know now.
More news for this week. February 2nd, Google's going to announce something at an Android event. We all know that's going to be Honeycomb.
Or yeah, it's going to be a demo of Honeycomb. We'll be covering it live with Gina Trapani and Jeff Jarvis and myself, 10 a.m. Pacific time, 1 p.m. Eastern time, right here at live.twit.tv.
Perfect.
Just for the first hour of the announcement before we go to security now.
Oh, but that's not all for February 2nd. No, sir. The Dell Streak 7 is launching at T-Mobile with two-year contract. It's going to be $200 and $450 if you don't want the contract. So got some options there. The HTC Thunderbolt is rumored to be hitting Best Buy on February 14th. So that's a nice Valentine's present if you're into that sort of thing. That makes you feel romantic. Not with
Honey,
a mobile hotspot.
I got you a Thunderbolt.
Thank you, dear. But where are my chocolates? It's not going to have a mobile hotspot. It's not going to have Skype video. Although there is a separate leak that's claiming that it will be hotspot enabled, plus have the ability to call and surf at the same time on EVDO, which is good for current EDPO users. I don't know.
Probably two radios.
Finally, rounding out a lot of February news, Motorola is going to be selling the Zoom tablet PC as early as February. So that could be as early as tomorrow or as late as
this is one of those
28 days from
DigiTimes
today.
Reports. But they say that they've got it all ready to go. They're going to get the jump. Everybody else is going to have to wait till March. I guess we might find out at this Android Honeycomb thing. There might be an announcement about that.
Mm-hmm. Very
tune
true.
In.
Very true.
All right, on to the emails to TNT at twit.tv.
First one comes from Lorian. That's a neat name. Lorian says, hi, Tom and everyone. On behalf of everyone, hello. In regards to Amazon selling more ebooks than paperbacks, I'd be interested in hearing what percentage of their ebook sales were books downloaded for free. Mm. I know that when I first downloaded the app on my computer, I downloaded about 50 free books. However, I buy most of my paperback books secondhand, not from Amazon. So people like me may be one reason these ebook numbers are so darn high. That is an interesting point.
I looked it up. I went back to last week's story and checked it out. Free books were not included in the count. It was the numbers that they gave were the number of books they sold, mm-hmm. but they said it was only books that they actually people actually paid for, not free books. So the number of for pay Amazon ebooks outsold paperbacks.
So maybe we can just attribute the fact that ebooks are so popular to the fact that people tried out the free ebooks and went, hey, this is actually a great way to consume. Right. I'm going to go to the paid model. And it worked.
This doesn't even count like pirated books, which you can't do with the physical ones. Just
give me your book.
You can pirate physical books.
You can,
sure.
No, but Xerox. Oh, Xerox, yeah. I guess you're right. That's a
big
process.
Deal on campuses.
You know, CP That's is right. so much easier.
Yeah. All right. And to finish off, I want to thank Saif, who brought to my attention the Google Doc in Egypt for finding missing people. He says, I do not know if other protests, disasters, or critical events have used Google Docs to find missing people and create a list of missing people in the past. However, regardless of where one stands on these protests, it is heart-wrenching to have a loved one missing in any circumstance. A tool like this is incredible and speaks to the importance of an open internet. Couldn't said it any better myself, Saif.
Absolutely.
Stay safe, everybody. Involved in Egypt, and our best wishes to you. And that's it for our show.
Well, it was a pretty jam-packed Monday, gotta say.
It was a pretty jam-packed for a Monday, definitely. Don't forget, if you want more ShmooCon, check out Hack5, hack5.org, H-A-K,
number five.
Yeah. And you can find us on the web at twit.tv/TNT. Email us, TNT at twit.tv, or give us a call, 260-TNT-SHOW. We'll see you tomorrow.